My name is Dr. Verdeep, and you are listening to Seeking Wellness Radio, Our Bodies Explained. It's actually my 1 year anniversary being here at WPKN as a live broadcaster, and I've loved it. I've loved the questions that everybody's called in with, and today we have a very special show. It's a mouth-watering episode of Our Bodies Explained, all about bacteria. We're going to be discussing the health benefits of fermented foods. So Seeking Wellness Radio is a show to help you feel inspired and informed in making proactive lifestyle decisions to improve your health and the health of your family and local community. Today's show is live. It's a call-in show, so please feel free to call in with any questions that you may have for me during this hour. The number to call is 203-336-9756. So, fermented foods have been a hot topic lately, especially as researchers are identifying all of the health benefits of probiotic bacteria. Fermented foods are a natural source, a whole food source of health-promoting probiotic bacteria. People have been eating fermented foods since ancient times. So historians have identified that for as long as we've been an agricultural society, we've been consuming fermented foods. It's possible that even before then, we were eating fermented foods that were unintentionally fermented, such as rotting flesh, rotting fruits. A lot of animals in the animal kingdom have been known to unintentionally get drunk from consuming rotting fruit. Bats have been found to lose their ability to use their sonar system, their internal navigation system, when they've consumed rotting fruit. And rotting fruit is a source of probiotic bacteria. If you look from a cultural perspective, virtually every culture has had some sort of fermented food that's a prized staple in their cuisine. And many health-conscious Americans, we enjoy these different staples from all over the world. One that everybody's probably been having at barbecues is sauerkraut, which originates in Germany. It's fermented cabbage. The cabbage is actually fermented in its own juice. So when you're making sauerkraut, the recipe is just to shred or chop up cabbage, put it in a jar, add salt, and then you let the you mash the sauerkraut with your hands, and the internal juices of the cabbage will come out because of the effects of the salt, the osmotic effects of the salt. And then the cabbage is then pickled in its own brine, and it attracts lactobacillus bacteria. There's cordito, which is from El Salvador. So if you're a taco fanatic or you enjoy South American food, cordito is pickled or fermented cabbage as well with onions and carrots. It's delicious. We have kimchi, which is another type of fermented cabbage from Korea. And then we also have other forms of fermented foods. Us as Americans, we also probably really enjoy the combination of wine and cheese, which France is very much known for, also forms of fermented food. And out of Russia and China, we have kombucha. And kombucha has become increasingly popular as a probiotic. Kombucha is a fermented tea, and it's fermented by a bacterial and fungal symbiotic colony. People consider it a mushroom, but it's actually a blend of many different yeasts and bacteria that cooperatively work together in fermenting sweetened tea. And then out of Japan, we have soy sauce. And if you love sushi, then you've probably consumed soy sauce more times than you can remember. So really, fermented foods are a common part of our culture here in the United States. If you think about it, Kitchens in the ancient times were probably radically different than they are today, now that we have running water and electricity. We can have refrigeration. In order for our ancestors to survive extremes of weather and famine, especially before we had widespread trade of produce the way we had today, we had to learn how to preserve our own food. And that's where the process of fermentation seems to originate. In order for fermentation to occur, we need normal bacteria or yeasts, or both, to metabolize the sugars in foods into other compounds such as lactic acid, acetic acid, and alcohol, in order for those cells to produce energy. The lactic acid, the acetic acid, and the alcohols that are produced by the bacteria and fungi are dubbed biopreservatives that retain nutrients within the foods while preventing spoilage of the said food and promoting the growth of pathogenic bacteria. So not only does fermenting fruits and vegetables and meats, meat should only be fermented by experts in the field of fermentation, but fermenting fruits, veggies, and meats help to prolong the shelf life. And it turns out that it also increases the nutritional value of the food. What's amazing is the diversity of microbes that come from different cultures and different types of food that give each dish its own unique flavor. So those who do a lot of fermenting at home will be quick to agree that no one batch of fermented food tastes the same. And it's because it's really dependent on the pH of the substance that you're fermenting. It's dependent on the bacteria that's on the food itself. Especially organic foods tend to have a lot of soil-based bacteria on them. It's also affected by the bacteria of the person that's fermenting it. So if you're fermenting cabbage, then and you're, you know, squeezing the cabbage with your hands, then your hand bacteria is getting on it. You may be breathing bacteria from your mouth and nose out onto the cabbage. So really, fermenting is a super intimate process. And every time you create a new ferment, it could have a completely different flavor. If you've been following my show over the past year, then you know that one of the most fascinating topics for me is human evolution, especially as it relates to health. In the case of fermented foods, we see a symbiotic relationship shown in the bacteria and yeast that benefit from us creating ferments, but we also, as we'll talk about soon, derive a lot of health benefits from the fermented foods. If you're just tuning in, my name is Dr. Verdi, and you're listening to Our Bodies Explained Radio. We're talking about fermented foods. So I want to know, what kinds of fermented foods do you enjoy? How has your health changed since incorporating fermented foods? What questions do you have about fermented foods? The number to call is 203-336-9756. So the bacteria and yeast that's found in fermented foods are dubbed probiotic bacteria. The World Health Organization defines probiotic bacteria as live microorganisms, which when administered in adequate amounts, confer a health benefit to the host. In terms of fermented foods, we are the host. In particular, our gastrointestinal tract seems to be the host of a lot of the probiotic foods that we consume. Our GI tract is heavily colonized by probiotic bacteria that are also able to use the foods that we consume for their own metabolic processes. And they're able to remain safe within our mucosal lining of our intestines, and that creates a shelter for the probiotic bacteria to live and grow and support our own health. So they offer us significant health benefits, including, as we talked about before, increased nutritional value of foods. Many metabolites of fermented foods actually serve as antioxidants. Antioxidant foods are the foods that help, they're known to help prevent cancer, prolong health. They're known as anti-aging foods, and it's because the antioxidants in them have the ability to quench free radical damage that can contribute to diseases like cardiovascular disease, diabetes. So examples of antioxidants that are made from fermented foods include carotenoids, which are the bright substances that make blueberries extra blue, bell peppers extra red, yellow, green, so carotenoids. Glutathione, which is the master antioxidant. So our gut bacteria can actually create glutathione for our bodies. And even beta-glucan that's in the cell walls of probiotic bacteria can serve as an antioxidant. So one of the questions that Valerie was asking me before we came on the radio was if you can derive benefit from consuming regular yogurt. So if you're consuming pasteurized yogurt, it's likely the bacterial colonies have died because it's not a live active culture because it was pasteurized. But the bacteria, their cell walls contain beta-glucan. And so beta-glucan is known as a powerful immune stimulant. It boosts immune activity. So even consuming dead bacteria has been found to be beneficial. Fermented foods also improve the nutrition in our food in a couple of different ways. For one, they're able to metabolize anti-nutrient substances such as oxalic acid, which is infamous for leading to kidney stones. So people who have a predisposition to kidney stones may benefit from incorporating fermented foods or fermenting their vegetables that are higher in oxalic acid. But they also metabolize phytic acid using an enzyme phytase, which we as humans, we don't have the digestive enzyme for breaking down phytic acid. So it's something that only, it seems, bacteria have. And phytic acid is the substance that you find in grains and legumes that actually can bind to minerals like calcium, iron, and zinc, causing the nutrients that would otherwise be found in your meal to not be absorbed by your body. It'll actually just chelate out of your digestive tract. Phytic acid is often what causes gastrointestinal upset when people don't rinse or soak their grains like rice, quinoa, legumes, chickpeas before they eat it. So sometimes I have patients who come in and they're coming in for gas and bloating, and I'll ask them questions that seem really irrelevant, and I'll see a puzzled look on their face. And one of them is, do you eat a lot of legumes like lentils and beans? Do you eat a lot of quinoa, brown rice? How do you prepare it? Are you rinsing it? And that's because there have been cases where people have wanted to come in and see me as patients, and I found out that it's just improper food preparation, and it's better to figure that out before you go in to the doctor's office and then learn, oh, I just need to start rinsing my grains. So rinsing grains, soaking them can help reduce phytic acid, but fermenting foods can significantly reduce phytic acid because the bacteria have the ability to break it down. So the nutritional benefits of fermented foods increases the bioavailability of these nutrients, calcium, iron, and zinc. And it's so significant, the health benefits are so significant that in India, the National Institute of Nutrition's Dietary Guidelines for Indians from 2010 encourage pregnant women to increase the consumption of fermented foods and sprouted foods due to their, number one, easy digestibility, because the phytic acid has been broken down by the sprouting or fermentation process, but also because of the increase in micronutrient bioavailability, specifically the B vitamins and vitamin C. It's unfortunate that in our food pyramid, we don't really see fermented foods as a category. If anything, we'll see yogurt show up as in the dairy section and cheese show up in the dairy section, but we really don't see it as a part of the food pyramid. And I hope that we'll start to see that change as we're uncovering so many of the benefits. But it looks like India does recommend it to the general population. So the bacteria and fungi in fermented foods can also increase folate levels, B12, B1, B2, B3, as well as GABA, which is a calming neurotransmitter, and it can increase GABA from production in our GI tract. So on mornings where I know that I'm going to have a lot of energy, which right now I have a 7-month-old who's able to walk and crawl, so he has me up at 5:30 every morning, I will actually make a fermented Irish oatmeal the night before. And the way that you ferment it is you roast Irish oats. I usually roast it in my microwave oven, and then you grind it. I use a coffee grinder because that seems to be the quickest way. So you grind it, doesn't take more than a couple of seconds. Then you put it in a container. You add filtered water, so chemical-free, chlorine-free water, and then around a cup and a half to 1 cup of Irish oats. And then you add vinegar, 2 tablespoons. You let it sit overnight, and the next morning you cook it up, and you have a high-nutrient, high B vitamin probiotic food. The recipe is from the Nourishing Traditions cookbook, and they have all sorts of amazing fermented foods, fermented grains that are based out of traditional cultures. So many traditional Indian processes in consuming legumes and grains, such as rice and lentils, include pre-soaking and also fermenting the foods before they're consumed. I cannot speak for all Indians. I am Indian, but I cannot speak for all Indians, but I can speak to a pattern that I've noticed within 3 generations of my family. So my grandmothers, they were born in India, but they were raised in Kenya, and they spent their early adult life in Kenya. They saw a huge transition within kitchens where houses started to have built-in stoves, dishwashers, and refrigeration within their lifetime. It's crazy to think about living a life without those things now, but we're living in a time where our oldest generation has seen that change. And with these changes, we've seen a change in how traditional foods are prepared. So these days, when I see our traditional recipes being prepared, our dals, which are lentils, they're often not pre-soaked. They're cooked right away, partially probably because of time. And also we have the ability to store food in the refrigerator. But the traditional fermented flatbreads that we consume now come readily made in premixes where you just add water and you cook it. So it's not even, while it tastes like our fermented flatbreads, it's not. It's not fermented. So I can't help but wonder, my grandma struggled with arthritis and joint pain. And I can't help but wonder if the arthritis and joint pain and osteoporosis that they've been struggling with may be because of the change in how we're preparing foods, where the phytic acid content is so high in these foods that we're actually losing zinc and magnesium and calcium and the nutrients that we need to build our bones. So we'll have more on this soon. One thing that I often think about is how, in spite of our greatest efforts to live a healthful life, our outside world can expose us to substances that can be harmful for us. And they may be substances that we're not even aware we're being exposed to. And it's hard when you're living a healthful life, because you don't want to then turn into somebody that's acting out of fear. And I see that a lot when people start learning about the toxins that are around us. You can kind of become a hypochondriac in some ways. Not the definitive diagnosis of a hypochondriac, but you can start to become more anxious about the world around you. I definitely felt that way when I was taking my environmental medicine class. And I actually recognize how little control we have every time I take my dog on a walk in flip-flops and I realize that I'm walking on grass that has been treated with pesticides. Or there are times where I really want to enjoy a salad or produce that I know is really high in pesticides. But it turns out that our probiotic bacteria have the ability to metabolize organophosphate pesticide absorption, and they have the ability to neutralize the toxicity of organophosphate pesticides, specifically a probiotic known as Lactobacillus rhamnosus. So this is amazing, and this may explain why some people are so heavily sensitive to pesticides, among other toxins, while others are not. They don't seem to be affected at all. So probiotics can also help to prevent poisoning. Not frank poisoning, but it can prevent us from being affected by organophosphate pesticides. Certain cultures where cassava is consumed, cassava is really high in cyanide, which can be poisonous for people if consumed in high quantities. And fermentation can actually help lower cyanide levels, which cultures that consume cassava, they tend to ferment it first. There's also a toxic substance in peanut butter. If the peanut butter is contaminated with aspergillus, which is a common mold that we find that affects legumes like peanuts, the aspergillus can contain a toxin called aflatoxin, which our body will then metabolize into aflatoxin. I think it's aflatoxin B is the name of it. So aflatoxin B, once it's metabolized by our body, is classified as a class 1 carcinogen. It's linked to liver cancer and immune suppression. So for those peanut butter lovers, it can be really bad news. But it turns out that when we're consuming or when we have high levels of Lactobacillus plantarum, or if we consume Lactobacillus plantarum, this bacteria can actually metabolize aflatoxin B, or it'll also block the absorption of aflatoxin, and it'll inhibit the growth of aspergillus. So it helps to prevent the toxicity of aflatoxin B in many different ways. And so it prevents aflatoxin B from being produced in our bodies when we're exposed to aflatoxin. And it also prevents it from binding to our DNA and causing precancerous changes. On top of all of that, it's also been found to reverse the oxidative damage caused by aflatoxin. So this is a powerful strain, and it has amazing health benefits. So this is just a couple of research studies that I was able to find on the topic, but imagine how much more information is out there that we have yet to discover about how our probiotic bacteria can protect us from toxins. So if you're just tuning in, my name is Dr. Verdi. You're listening to Seeking Wellness Radio, Our Bodies Explained. Today's topic is on the health benefits of fermented foods and probiotic bacteria. If you have any questions, feel free to call in at 203-336-9756. So bacteria are also able to protect us by improving our immunity. In fact, human immunodeficiency virus, commonly known as HIV, which is a syndrome that affects our immunity and it weakens our immune system, people who suffer from it have been found to have increased CD4 levels with consumption of probiotic bacteria. CD4 is a type of T cell which directs how our immune system should respond to invading viruses and bacteria. It also can direct the identification of tumor cells and can eliminate them. So it's kind of like the chief commander if we were looking at our immune system as an army. And so when people who suffer from HIV develop the HIV or the full-blown HIV, they have lower levels of CD4. And so their immune system can't seem to respond to things that a healthy immune system would be able to respond to. So we see an increase in cancers. We see bacteria and viruses that usually don't affect people suddenly now causing cancer, causing full-blown gastroenteritis, full-blown pneumonia. It can be a crippling condition once people develop it. So it turns out that in HIV sufferers, increasing fermented foods increases CD4 levels. So it doesn't cure HIV, but it helps to prolong quality of life and improve the immune system of people who are affected. One of my favorite fermenters who's world renowned for fermenting, his name is Sander Eli Katz, believes that the combination of his antiretroviral therapy and fermented foods is what's kept him healthy for so long after he received the diagnosis of HIV. In Tanzania, homemade yogurt increased the CD4 count of HIV-affected individuals. This is homemade yogurt. It's not synthesized in a lab. It's not a supplement that you can buy over the counter. It's grassroots at home yogurt. It's cheap and it's easy to make. And it's been found to even improve sufferers in rural Tanzania. So this is huge. It's cheap, cheap ways to boost our health. And the thing about HIV and the antiretrovirus medications is that it can really damage our gut barrier. And so when our gut barrier is damaged, we can have microbial toxins leaking into our bloodstreams. And we can also see decreased absorption of micronutrients. And it seems like that's one of the contributors to developing infection in HIV sufferers. So it seems as if the probiotic yogurt is a good way to protect the gut and to stimulate the immune system in the ways that HIV sufferers need support. Probiotic bacteria have also been identified to increase T regulatory cell levels. So T regulatory cells are a type of white blood cell that help to regulate when the immune system becomes hyperactive. So we just talked about HIV. It's a case where the immune system is hypoactive. It's not able to respond to viral infections, bacterial infections. People are prone to getting sick. But then at the same time, we can have overactivity of our immune system, and that can lead to autoimmune diseases. So inflammatory bowel disease is one autoimmune disease that we've been studying a lot. It's a condition where the immune system, the body, starts to attack its own intestines or colon. And probiotic bacteria have been found to increase T regulatory cells, which help to reduce that hyperactive immune response in the case of autoimmune disease. Probiotic bacteria have also been found to shift our immune system from being overactive and promoting allergies, asthma, and skin-related allergic reactions, so eczema, or what we call atopy in the medical world, to reducing that kind of allergic response to increasing the immune response to bacteria, parasites, and viruses. So it can balance out the branches of our immune system when it looks like one branch may be overreacting. So it's pretty amazing, the health benefits of probiotic bacteria. Reactive arthritis is a form of arthritis that for now, we think might be triggered by gastrointestinal infections like salmonella, for example. And reactive arthritis was found to be responsive to probiotic fermented milk. And the thought is that it because it alters the bacterial balance in our GI tract and prevents the salmonella from being able to release toxins that would affect our joints. So it's pretty amazing. If you're just tuning in, my name is Dr. Verdi. We're talking about fermented foods. And fermented foods, as we're going to talk about soon, come from all over the world, and there's many different ways of preparing it. If you're listening and you have any questions, feel free to call in. If you're listening and you have a fermented food that changed your life, we want to hear from you. So the number to call is 203-336-9756. So from a metabolic perspective, probiotics have been studied in the medical literature for improving fasting blood sugar and the average blood sugar levels through the antioxidant properties that we talked about earlier. So this is specifically diabetics were studied for this, and it was found that their hemoglobin A1C, which is their average blood sugar over time, had decreased with introducing just probiotic bacteria. They've also been found to lower cholesterol, and they've been found to be therapeutic in helping to promote weight loss in obese individuals. Bacteria are readily efficient in extracting energy from food, and it turns out that the type of diet we eat can heavily influence the types of bugs that grow in our GI tract. So high-fat, low-fiber diets are associated with increased toxic substances that are released from opportunistic or bacteria in our gut that may be detrimental to our health. Specifically, lipopolysaccharide, which is, it looks like we have a question. Good morning. This is Dr. Verdi.
Good morning, Dr. Verdi. This is Marlene. Your program is really very interesting. Thank you. But I have a critical question to ask you. Seeing how microwaving food destroys the enzymic activity in food, why do you choose to microwave your oats rather than pan frying them?
Oh, you know, I was wondering about that when I spoke, so I might have misspoke. I meant to say toaster oven, not microwave oven. And as soon as I said it, I was wondering if I had said the wrong thing. Sorry, I've been awake since 5:30, so I can get a little loopy. But I meant to say toaster oven, not microwave oven.
5:30 is not early.
That was Rod. thank you for calling in, Marlene.
Okay, you can pan fry it too then.
You can pan fry it. So the reason why I don't pan fry it is because, well, I feel like my show might take a twist towards mothers of young children. But the reason why I don't pan fry it is because I have to keep an eye on my son while I'm trying to eat healthy. So it's easier for me to just stick it in the toaster oven, walk away, check in on it, wait for the smell. I've been known to accidentally burn things when it's on the stove, but you can stove roast it and wait until you get this beautiful roasted oatmeal scent, and it'll kind of turn like a light brown color when it's ready to be ground.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
You're welcome. Thank you for correcting me.
Bye.
Bye. So, again, that recipe for Irish oats is in the Nourishing Traditions cookbook. So, we were talking about how bacteria are very efficient in extracting energy. Am I on air? On extracting energy from food. And it turns out that the type of diet that we can eat can heavily influence the type of bugs that grow in our diet. So the high-fat, low-fiber diets, which we tend to eat if we're eating what we consider a standard American or a Western diet, tends to be higher in fat and lower in fiber. It can increase the activity of the dysbiotic bacteria and cause them to release toxins, which if we have impaired gut lining, it can reach our bloodstream. So that's one of the ways that it's speculated that bad gut bacteria activity in our GI tract can contribute to insulin resistance, which we eventually leads to diabetes. And that's also why researchers think that probiotic bacteria and fermented foods may be beneficial for people who struggle with insulin resistance, prediabetes, diabetes, which is just a huge epidemic right now in the United States. So I'm all about prevention and people supporting their microbiome before any of these things happen. So how would a prebiotic impact the health? If you're listening and you're a health enthusiast, then you may have heard about prebiotics. So probiotics have an indirect way, or sorry, prebiotics have an indirect way of supporting our colon. When we eat a high fiber meal, the undigested fiber will actually pass through our intestines and come into our colon and then be metabolized by friendly gut bacteria into short chain fatty acids. The short chain fatty acids include substances like acetate, butyrate, and propionate. And these short chain fatty acids, especially butyrate, nourish our colon cells, provide them with nutrition, help to improve the motility of the colon, so the movement of food through the colon, decrease cell proliferation. So if you're above the age of 50, you may have had a colonoscopy, and that was to look to see if there was any growths. So probiotics have been found to, or short-chain fatty acids like butyrate that's produced by our gut bacteria, has been found to decrease that cell growth that's linked to growths in our colon. And it may help to ameliorate symptoms of ulcerative colitis and prevent the progression of a full-blown colitis. So it's also, it seems that the metabolic effects of the gut bacteria are supporting our GI tract indirectly by nourishing our intestines. There have been a couple of studies done on germ-free mice. And germ-free mice are mice that have been treated with antimicrobials that have blocked their ability to have bacteria in their GI tract. And they've been found to have a decreased capacity to repair themselves, the small intestine and the colon, decreased digestive enzyme capacity, and less resistance to infections. And this is specifically in mice because we can't eradicate the bacteria that's in a human's gut for studies. It would just be very unethical. So people who are, it's still, some people would consider it unethical to treat mice to study them too. But in terms of human trials, there's a lot of control over what we can and can't do to humans. So that's why we're using germ-free mice. But I speculate that it's true for humans too, especially since I've seen clinically one symptom of having low probiotic bacteria in the gut is people tend to get food poisoning frequently. They'll be the only friend when they went on vacation to develop gastroenteritis, or when they go out for family meals, they'll be the one that's immediately running to the bathroom because they're having a reaction to the food they're eating. And it may just be that they have decreased probiotic bacteria that makes them less resistant to infections in their GI tract. So, probiotic supplements. There's a huge difference between probiotic foods and probiotic supplements. In order for a bacterial strain to be considered a probiotic, it has to meet certain set criteria. So one, favorable probiotic properties. So we have to know that that strain of bacteria has been found to have positive outcomes in people who have been supplemented with it. Number two, they need to have the ability to overcome high acid environments. The reason why is because our stomach is so high in acid that if we take a probiotic supplement, our stomach acid could degrade that probiotic. Number three, it has to have bile resistance. So it turns out that the bile produced by our gallbladder is very antimicrobial. It can help prevent any sort of bacterial infections in the gut. So the probiotic bacteria have to overcome gallbladder juices or bile in order to be colonized in the colon itself. So it has to have probiotic properties, overcome acid, overcome bile, and then give a health benefit to the person who's consuming them. So specific strains have been studied for their beneficial effects on human health, and those strains have been isolated and provided in pill form. Children who are put on probiotic bacteria seem to have a lower susceptibility to rotavirus, influenza, even respiratory tract infections like pneumonia and common colds. So one thought is that it might be because probiotic bacteria, when they enter our GI tract, can bind to pathogenic bacteria and block their ability to bind to our gut and cause a full-blown infection, which bacteria need to be able to bind. Bacteria and viruses need to be able to bind somewhere on our body before they can cause an infection. So the way I see it is usually, like, I picture a space alien docking onto Earth. So these bacteria and viruses need to dock onto our bodies before they can take over. So for the most part, probiotic supplements seem to come from the lactic acid bacteria group, known as LAB, where lactate is formed from the sugar. So this group includes lactobacillus, streptococcus, enterococcus, lactococcus, and bifidobacterium. If you go to your local health food store and you look on the back of probiotic bottles, you'll see that they always tend to have the same strains of probiotic bacteria. And that's because these are the ones that have been studied and approved for human use. But these are also the bacteria that we find in popular dishes like yogurt, sauerkraut, kimchi, and kefir, to name a few. Fermentation of sugar to ethanol is also done by yeasts. Saccharomyces cerevisiae is associated with bread making and beer production. It looks like we have another call. Hi, this is Dr. Verdi.
Hi, good morning. I recently found out that I have a high rheumatoid count in my blood, and I'm wondering if you could speak to that. Also, I am brewing my own kombucha, and I was wondering if you could speak about kombucha and the benefits of kombucha, if you think there are any.
Yeah. So the rheumatoid arthritis, the naturopathic approach to treating it involves balancing out the immune system. So we were just talking about how it's been found that probiotic bacteria can increase T regulatory cells, which are the white blood cells in our body that reduce overactive immune functioning. So the one condition that we've seen that in is ulcerative colitis, but a lot of naturopathic doctors have found benefit from examining the types of bacteria that are growing in the GI tract. You can, one of the ways that naturopathic doctors can do it is by, having the patient collect a stool sample and sending it off to a lab, and the lab will actually look at the DNA that's present in the stool itself, and you'll be able to get information about the types of bacteria, whether they're good bacteria, bad bacteria. There's a lot of research going on right now with, identifying the full gastrointestinal bacterial microbiome, but identifying if there's any infections or low-grade infections in the GI tract can be beneficial in starting to treat those. But as we're learning now, fermented foods can actually regulate the types of bacteria that are growing in our GI tract and kind of help to decrease any types of bacteria that may not be benefiting our health. In terms of kombucha itself, there's not a lot of research out there right now about the reasons why we find kombucha to be helpful outside of the fact that it's a fermented food. But some ideas include that it increases the metabolism of our good gut bacteria. And It's been found also to improve our immune activity. There have been cases where people have had autoimmune disease, and they've found that consuming kombucha tea can help regulate it, along with, you know, working with either their naturopathic doctor or their rheumatologist.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too.
Okay, so Valerie, it looks like we have 4 minutes. Oh, we have 5 minutes? Okay. Oh, 9 minutes. Okay, cool. So I still have a lot that I want to talk about, which means that, as usual, we're probably going to have a part two to this show. It seems like an hour just isn't enough time to cover all of the benefits of natural medicine when we choose a specific topic. So lactobacillus has been found to help with a lot of IBS symptoms, so the diarrhea and constipation that irritable bowel syndrome sufferers may deal with. We were also talking about how it can boost immunity. So one of the things I mentioned was specifically lung infections in small children. Giving a probiotic can help reduce the development of lung infections. And again, in the research studies that have been found, where that's been found, it's thought that it might be because the gut has an indirect effect on our overall immune functioning. So supporting our probiotic bacteria may be improving the CD4 or the commander white blood cells, helping our bodies to mobilize and respond if we're being exposed to the common cold, for example. Formula-fed infants have been found to gain more weight if they're given formula with probiotics in it, specifically with Lactobacillus acidophilus. And then Lactobacillus plantarum, another probiotic, the one that's found to neutralize aflatoxin in peanut butter, it's been found to prevent sepsis in infants under 3 months of age, or not to prevent it, but to help reduce the likelihood. And sepsis in children under 3 months is one of the most common causes of infant mortality. So when researchers discovered this, India in particular believes that children should be given probiotics to help to support their immunity. So there's a lot of benefits to people of all ages. But it seems like the health benefits of fermented foods, it may not be because of the presence of the probiotic bacteria itself. So going back to the kombucha question, it's not necessarily that kombucha is full of probiotics, but it's how the fermented foods modify our guts. So when I hear people talk about fermented foods, they often say, so it's kind of like you're having the fermented food and the probiotic bacteria is then colonizing the GI tract. But it turns out that the GI tract, the bacteria that we have in our GI tract, it's happy there and it wants to stay there. So it's actually resistant to colonization by probiotic foods that we eat. It turns out that it seems like when people are consuming fermented foods, the fermented food may be increasing the activity of bacteria that are already present in our GI tract, but also, and here's the kicker, bacteria are prokaryotic, which means that they have very fluid genomes. Their DNA is very fluid, and they share DNA with each other. So it may actually be that when we're consuming kombucha and yogurt and kefir and other fermented foods, those bacteria that are in those foods may be communicating with the bacteria in our gut and sharing DNA and improving the well-being of the host through sharing DNA. And bacteria are rapidly evolving to meet the demands of their environments. And because this is a case of symbiosis, if we have a need that needs to be met, it's possible that there might be a bacteria out there that has evolved a mechanism to meet that need. And bam, that's when we're seeing the benefit of probiotic bacteria or fermented foods. So in terms of supporting the microbiota, the health and the equilibrium of our microbiome are constantly facing threats, from the overprescription of antibiotics and the use of antifungals to using Purell, hand sanitizers, over-sanitizing our environment, using soaps and bleaches that are antimicrobial and disinfectants. Even children's toys have been found to have antibiotic things embedded in them. So supporting our GI tract, number one, bacteria love real food. I constantly notice that the food that I'm getting from the farmer's market gets moldy if I don't eat it in a few days. And it's because it's organic food. It's food that bacteria love. And I always smile when I see that, because for me, it's confirmation that the food I'm eating is in demand and it promotes life. Whereas I'll often see my husband buy food full of preservatives or breads full of preservatives, and it'll never grow mold. But when I buy him organic bread, it'll usually mold within a week if he hasn't had it. So this is an area of contention in our household. But consuming real foods can support our GI tract, and consuming things that are covered in pesticides can actually have negative effects. It can be antimicrobial and destroy good bacteria that are in our GI tract. Eating a high fiber diet, like we talked about before, can support our colon health because of the increase in short chain fatty acids that support our colon health. So high fiber diets are also beneficial. Eating salads, for me, it's a salad a day keeps the doctor away. So the key is having a balanced diet where you're eating real fruits, vegetables, whole grains. Consider fermenting your grains. So I want to make sure we cover everything before the show gets over. So I'm going to skip over some of the things I wanted to talk about. Prebiotics. So the best forms of prebiotics are actually soluble fiber, which is fiber that dissolves in water. So inulin is an example of a prebiotic that helps to grow our good gut bacteria. It supports the growth and nourishment of our good gut bacteria. Sources of inulin include chicory root, garlic, onions, asparagus, bananas. If you like coffee, you can actually get chicory root from a local health food store, roasted chicory root. And it tastes a lot like coffee. It has like a kind of bitter flavor. And I tend to recommend it for people who love coffee and they're having like 6 or 7 cups of coffee, but we want to support their gut health. So roasted chicory root is a good prebiotic. Inulin's been specifically found to increase bifidobacterium in our GI tract, which is a probiotic. Our drinking water is something else to consider. So a lot of water is treated with chlorine as a disinfectant, and it turns out that that chlorine could be impacting the types of bacteria that's growing in your GI tract. So consider investing in a water filter, or you can boil your water and then let it sit, and the chlorine will evaporate off of the water. So last but not least, I wanted to just say that if you found this show interesting, feel free to check out specific books. So I really like Wild Fermentation by Sander Eli Katz, who is the HIV-affected individual who improved his diet through fermentation. He has great recipes and great info. And then also the Nourishing Traditions Cookbook. So you just listened to Our Bodies Explained Radio. I'm Dr. Verdi. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful month.